As we commemorate the 50th anniversary of the March on Selma this week and the subsequent passage of the Voting Rights Act, I want to once again call to the attention of my colleagues here in Congress that there are still American citizens today who do not have equal voting rights. While we may discuss the irrational and truly illogic mechanisms which has excluded those from who have been convicted of felons from society for voting, I want to discuss another group which has been disenfranchised. That is some 4 million people, to be exact. These are citizens of America's island territories, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Northern Marianas, American citizens who willingly risk life and limb in defense of a great nation for which they do not have a vote.
On the 50th anniversary of the March on Selma, Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett, the non-voting delegate to Congress from the U.S. Virgin Islands, spoke out against the lack of voting rights of Americans living in overseas territories. This week, we take a look at the 4 million Americans who are disenfranchised simply for living in one of America's island territories. America the voiceless. I'm Maria Elena Perez.
And I'm Nikki Rojas. We're the hosts of America the Voiceless.
We believe all Americans have a voice, but too many Americans face roadblocks when it comes to casting their vote. America the Voiceless looks into the barriers many Americans have to overcome to make sure their voices are heard during the voting process.
Almost 4 million Americans currently reside in the island territories of Puerto Rico, Guam, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and the Northern Marianas. These residents are full-fledged American citizens, with two major exceptions. They can't vote in presidential elections, and they don't have any real representative power in Congress.
To make matters worse, residents living in American Samoa are not even given U.S. citizenship. American Samoans are known as U.S. nationals, which means they can't vote in any elections, even if they do move to one of the 50 states.
On this week's episode of America the Voiceless, we're diving into the racist laws that led to so many American citizens being disenfranchised and how these American citizens are fighting for their right to vote. We spoke to Neil Weir, the president and founder of Equally American, an advocacy organization fighting for equal rights and representation for Americans living in the U.S. territories.
We also spoke with Puerto Rican Gretchen Sierra Zorita, a board member of Equally American and head of Polyvox 78, a public policy and communications consulting firm. Neil and Gretchen broke down just how 4 million Americans have been disenfranchised and the legal fights Equally American has taken on to dismantle the racist insular cases.
This ongoing disenfranchisement, which now for places like Puerto Rico and Guam has lasted over 120 years, was grounded in a series of really racist Supreme Court decisions known as the insular cases, decided by the same court that decided Plessy versus Ferguson, which established a legal justification for racial segregation. The insular cases established this doctrine of territorial incorporation, where so-called quote-unquote unincorporated territories would not have the same constitutional rights that other Americans enjoyed, and also that there would be no promise of eventual full political participation in the United States, essentially signing off on a quasi-colonial status that never needed to be resolved by the political branches.
Just how racist were these Supreme Court decisions, you ask? The documentary film, The Insular Empire, explores America's role as a colonial power and how racism played a large role in how the country obtained and continues to rule its colonies.
The United States flag is flying over these lands. And so some people said, well, doesn't that mean American laws apply? In 1901, the insular cases. Basically, the judgment of the Supreme Court was that the new territories were inhabited by, quote, alien races. And they may not be able to understand Anglo-Saxon laws. Therefore, the Constitution doesn't have to apply.
Neal explained that the Supreme Court had the chance to overrule the insular cases, but opted not to. In June, the Supreme Court unanimously upheld the constitutionality of the Financial Oversight and Management Board for Puerto Rico, which has near total authority over the island's budget and finances. By upholding the board, the highest court in the land avoided the opportunity to overrule the insular cases.
Gretchen noted that the insular cases represent systematic racism at play in American politics. While the Supreme Court had the chance to overrule the insular cases, Congress also has had the chance to take action, but has failed to do so.
These days, we're talking constantly about systematic racism. And if there ever was systematic racism, was in the passing of the insular cases and the fact of the use of the insular cases as precedent for every decision that has been made till now, in which the Constitution does not apply to the territories in its totality. And therefore, Congress can take actions that are would be deemed unconstitutional in the states, but they can do just on the basis of the insular cases. And so it's really frustrating for people in the 50 states not to realize that the people of the territories are subjects of systematic racism.
Thankfully, organizations like Equally American have taken on legal fights to do the work Congress and the Supreme Court failed to do. Neal spoke to us about the latest lawsuit spearheaded by Equally American, which was filed on behalf of 6 residents of Guam and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Lead plaintiff Randy Reeves, an Air Force veteran, was essentially stripped of his voting rights when the Federal Aviation Administration sent him to Guam.
Yeah, we just filed an exciting new federal voting rights lawsuit in Hawaii, Reeves versus United States, on behalf of residents of Guam and the U.S. Virgin Islands, who'd be able to vote for president by absentee ballot if they lived literally anywhere else in the world, including if they lived on the U.S. International Space Station. Under federal and state overseas voting laws, if you move away from a state, you maintain absentee voting rights to vote for president and voting members of Congress. And even if you move to certain U.S. territories, you maintain those rights, but not if you move to other disfavored territories. And so the lawsuit raises an equal protection challenge that says when Congress or states expand voting rights in this way, they need to do it in a way that's fair and equitable. And they can't pick and choose which citizens are going to have these voting rights.
Neal was emphatic that this disenfranchisement is, simply put, an insult to America's veterans.
It's an insult. It's absurd. Randy Reeves, our lead plaintiff in Reeves versus United States, enlisted in the U.S. Air Force, was stationed in Germany on the front lines during the Cold War, and then after that was actually a civilian contractor for the Department of Defense as the wall between West and East Germany was being torn down. And while he was there, he voted by absentee ballot in his former state of residence. Later on then in life, after he was retired from the military and working for the Federal Aviation Administration, he was transferred from Hawaii to Guam, where he's now lived for almost 20 years. And as a result of that transfer of federal service, he now can't vote for president. He's now disenfranchised when it comes to voting representation in Congress, despite his military service and despite serving in the federal government and basically going, you know, where they transferred and assigned him to. And that's just the kind of situation that these federal and state overseas voting laws were meant to address, was to ensure that people did not become disenfranchised based on moving outside the states, either for military service or other federal service, or even just for business or educational opportunities abroad.
Unfortunately, Mr. Reeves is hardly the only veteran or U.S. military personnel to be affected by these archaic and racist laws. Neal noted that military service rates in the territories are higher than those in the 50 states. By virtue of living in the territories, these servicemen and women are stripped of the constitutional rights they vowed to protect.
So military service is something that has a proud tradition and history in each of the territories. And it's one of many reasons that everyone who lives in Guam and the other territories should have the right to vote just like other Americans. Military service rates in the territories tend to be much higher than anywhere else in the United States. And unfortunately, that also means that casualty rates in the territories are also correspondingly higher. There's more than 100,000 veterans that actually live in the territories who are disenfranchised. And this isn't just about, you know, the voting rights as some kind of symbolic issue. It actually has real-world consequences.
We were all reminded this month during Mental Health Awareness Week the importance of taking the time to care for your own mental health. With everything going on in the world today, it can be really easy to lose focus on taking care of your mental health.
Now, more than ever, it is super important to make your mental health a priority, and BetterHelp can help you do just that. BetterHelp is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online.
If you want to start therapy, BetterHelp will match you with a licensed professional to meet your specific needs. When you use BetterHelp, you'll get timely and thoughtful responses from your counselors, and you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions right from your home.
The best part is that BetterHelp is committed to finding the right therapeutic match for you, so they make it super easy and free to change counselors if you need to. And if you're worried about spending too much money on therapy, BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional counseling, and financial aid is available.
To get started, visit betterhelp.com/AVpodcast. That's better HELP, and join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
Listeners of America the Voiceless can get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/AVpodcast. It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star. Military service members and veterans living in the territories aren't just disenfranchised. They also face immense obstacles to receive the medical care they so desperately deserve and need. Neil explained that veterans living in Guam who may need treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD are forced to travel all the way to Hawaii to get any kind of support.
That's awful. The last thing a person suffering from PTSD needs is to be ripped away from their family, friends, and support group when they're getting help for their mental health issues. A new environment with no support system just spells disaster.
The Reeves case isn't the only lawsuit Equally American has been working on. The organization's lawsuit on behalf of American Samoan John Fiti Samanu sought to have him recognized as a natural-born U.S. citizen. Despite living in Utah and paying taxes for 20 years, Fiti Samanu's status as a U.S. national has deprived him from the right to vote in local, state, and federal elections.
Last December, a district court recognized that Fiti Samanu is a natural-born citizen, paving the way for him to register to vote. But the U.S. federal government had other ideas. The district court later stayed its ruling, pending appeal, blocking him from registering to vote. In September, the Department of Justice argued that the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals should reverse the landmark decision.
While American Samoans fight to be recognized as U.S. citizens, many Puerto Ricans are pushing to gain statehood. The movement for statehood has gained popularity as the island is struck by financial crises, poor management, and deadly natural disasters. Gretchen, who was born and raised in Puerto Rico, explained the evolution of this movement and why it's gained momentum.
Before the fiscal crisis, before the stage that Puerto Rico is on, before, I would say, 1996, before they took the corporate tax credit that led us into recession, Puerto Rican politics consumed Puerto Rican by and large. Attention was paid by Puerto Ricans, and always have been, to what was going on in Washington, but not with the same interest that we do now. And the difference is so much hangs on what Washington decides these days. You know, we had a fiscal crisis that led to a controlled board that was established by Washington. We have had a series of natural disasters that are dependent on assistance provided by Washington. And right now we're in a presidency that has been very unfair and punishing to Puerto Rico. And therefore we are looking with eyes to Washington. And so it's become very clear that not being able to vote has had real repercussions.
Puerto Ricans definitely turned to Washington after Hurricane Maria struck the island in September 2017. The Category 4 storm destroyed thousands of homes and killed at least 2,975 people. But the Trump administration was slow to provide any real relief.
During President Donald Trump's visit to the island, he claimed Puerto Rico had severely impacted the nation's budget, and even had the audacity to tell local leadership that they should be very proud of the low death count.
I hate to tell you, Puerto Rico, but you've thrown our budget a little out of whack because we've spent a lot of money on Puerto Rico, and that's fine. We've saved a lot of lives. If you look at the, every death is a horror, but if you look at a real catastrophe like Katrina, and you look at the tremendous hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that died, and you look at what happened here with really a storm that was just totally overpowering. Nobody's ever seen anything like this. Now, what is your death count as of this moment? 17?
16 certified.
16 people certified. 16 people versus in the thousands. You can be very proud.
As if Trump's comments weren't enough, the president then decided that throwing paper towels at a crowd gathered in San Juan was the appropriate response to a natural disaster. Now, 3 years after the deadly storm ravaged Puerto Rico, Trump is once again touting his commitment to the island and its people.
Yup. More than 1,000 days after Hurricane Maria left Puerto Rico in ruins, Trump pledged more than $13 billion in federal disaster funding to repair Puerto Rico's electrical grid and educational infrastructure. His promise conveniently came just weeks before Americans head to the polls to elect the nation's next president.
Of course, he's not the only one. In September, Democratic nominee Joe Biden made his biggest appeal for the Puerto Rican vote. Biden pushed against Trump's claim that he was the best thing to happen to Puerto Rico by claiming the president fails to remember that Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens.
I'm running to be president of all America, including 3 million American citizens living in Puerto Rico. I'm not going to steal the money that desperately needed to reconstruct the island in order to build a wall along the border that does nothing to keep Americans safe. I'm not going to suggest that we sell or trade, as was mentioned earlier, Puerto Rico. I'm not going to throw paper towels at people whose lives have just been devastated by a hurricane.
As the presidential nominees fight for Puerto Ricans' votes, Gretchen noted that they would be smart to avoid grouping Puerto Ricans with other Latinx people. While we all share a culture, Gretchen made the valid point that Puerto Ricans' concerns are better aligned with those living in other U.S. territories than those who come from Latin American countries.
As Latinos, you know, we have shared much more in common with the people in Guam and the Pacific than we share with the Colombians in Miami. And so I think our issues should be revisited that way. And when you look at the Biden plan for Puerto Rico, a lot of the issues they deal with are territorial issues, although people think of us as Latinos because we happen to be Latinos. So there's this dichotomy going on that's not really being recognized by politicians at large.
Gretchen also talked to us about what Americans in the States should know about citizens living in U.S. territories.
Something as basic as including the territories in the history books and saying the word colony, whether it's in the press, whether it's on media, whether it's in Congress. People in Congress, if you notice, will not use the word either. And I have asked about it. I've been told, no, we just don't use it because it's controversial. So just language matters. It's things as simple as that.
Neil warned that politicians shouldn't take Americans from the overseas territories for granted. He noted that those who have moved to the 50 states typically live in competitive swing states, which we all know will be vital in the 2020 election.
There's a territorial diaspora living throughout the United States of over 4 million citizens with ties to Puerto Rico, Guam, and the other territories. You know, many of them live in very competitive swing states. So more than a million Puerto Ricans live in Florida. A lot of Virgin Islanders live in Florida. States like Pennsylvania, you know, even states like Georgia. And these voters have a lot of power that, to date really hasn't been realized. But if the territorial diaspora were actually to flex its political muscles around these issues and others, there actually would be a lot more opportunity for positive change. This is an issue that should concern every American. When one group of Americans is discriminated against or denied the right to vote, that's something that's a threat to our entire country. You know, who we are is a country based on a foundation of democracy and consent of the governed. And no American community would accept being dictated to under federal law, but not having a say in what that federal law was, or being required to pay federal taxes, but not having a say in how those tax funds were spent. And so just as no other American community would accept this, neither should citizens in the territories have to. And that's where, wherever someone happens to live, they can vote on these issues, they can raise these issues to their elected officials to raise awareness about this. And as legislation moves forward, hopefully in the next Congress, to address these issues, stand up for these marginalized, disenfranchised Americans, just as one would stand up for other marginalized, disenfranchised groups.
Both Neil and Gretchen stressed that Americans who can vote should exercise their constitutional right to do so and should not take that right for granted. They also called on American voters to use their voting power to make sure that no American is disenfranchised.
I think what they should know is that, you know, their vote, the people going to vote for president throughout the United States, their vote counts, and the vote of citizens in the territories doesn't count. And so, you know, all the more reason to cherish the voting rights you do have. Make sure you do register and get out to vote, because many throughout history have fought for your voting rights. And in fact, there are remain citizens, including those in the territories and other situations, who continue to be denied their voting rights. And so it's something to cherish and take seriously and to exercise, because if you're silent, you do not have the kind of personal power and community power that's really needed to ensure that government is responsive to, you know, your needs and your community's needs.
I think it's extremely important to teach children and young adults the importance of the vote and why voting every 4 years, or in our family, every 2 years, because we vote in midterms, that is as important as going to your dentist for a checkup. You know, it should be part of your routine, in this case, part of your civic routine, and what you should be as an American citizen or as a citizen of the world. You don't have to tie it to a country. In my case in particular, when I vote, I am voting for Puerto Rico. So when I look at a candidate, my primary issue, and I have many, many areas of interest, is what will this president do for Puerto Rico? Is this a person that will work for Puerto Rico? And if that president works for Puerto Rico, I can assure you that person is going to be working for the other territories as well, because their issues are so intertwined.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of America the Voiceless. Join us next week as we discuss the barriers faced by millions of Americans with disabilities who just want to exercise their voting rights. A special thank you to our podcast producer, Willis Polk, audio engineer, Phil Williams, and the rest of the North Star staff.
This podcast is brought to you by the North Star, an independent media site fully supported by our members on thenorthstar.com. If you're not already a member, we'd love for you to subscribe so you can support our work. You can catch a fresh episode of America the Voiceless every Thursday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.